Welcome to Visible by Numbers with your host, Allison Bachman.
Hello and welcome to Visible by Numbers, being broadcast on beautiful BBS Radio, the largest radio station on the internet. This is your host, Allison Bachman, and I'm delighted you stopped in and to join me this evening. I have a very special guest to share with you tonight. Now, because I'm a numerologist, I'm always curious about my guest's numerology, and Leo was kind enough to share his information with me. And he's an 11 life path, and those of you who know the meaning of this very special life path number understand that his mission in this lifetime is to determine his truth, and oftentimes there's a strong spiritual connection, and once he has found his truth, his mission is to share and inspire humanity with what he has learned. And I really believe that his book, Healing the Rift, Bridging the Gap Between Science and Spirituality, is his message, and I'm delighted to offer my show as a forum where he can discuss his work. And so let me just take a moment and tell you a little bit about him. Now, Leo came from humble beginnings. He was the fourth of six children of a farm laborers, and yet he became a scientist and a biotechnology executive with over 50 scientific publications and patents to his credit. Leo's journey includes research and management in chemistry, bioinformatics, biotechnology, information technology, molecular biology, physics, and clinical trial studies. He has been active in new pharmaceutical and biotechnology disease treatment modalities as well as alternative medicine regimens. He has also studied with Deepak Chopra, Bernie Siegel, and many others who offer spiritually based supplements or alternatives to traditional healing. Leo has a PhD in physical organic chemistry from the University of Kansas, and he continued his education as a research associate at MIT. He is a CEO and general partner in a biotechnology venture capital firm, where he is tracking the progress of thousands of companies utilizing the latest developments in science. Needless to say, he's a pretty smart guy, and I'm going to humbly admit right here now that I do not know half of what I just said, what it means, okay? But Leo and I do share a common journey, and that is the sense that we both step outside of traditional thinking, and we seek to find the answers to the questions science fails to address. Now, as a scientist developing new drugs, Leo Kim felt helpless, and frustrated as he watched cancer patients die, and he embarked on a 25-year spiritual quest to understand human existence and what this world is all about. Now, the thesis of the book Healing the Rift is that the conflicts between science and spirituality can be resolved with recent scientific discoveries which reveal that our world is a blending of mind and spirit. Now, you're all welcome to go visit Leo's website for more information about this book, even as you listen to the interview. So right at the top of the show, I'd like to give you his website. It's www.healingtheriftbook.com, and that's Healing the Rift, R-I-F-T, book.com. And, you know, just jump onto his website, and there's a lot of really informative things there that'll give you a really clear sense of Leo's work and his book. And right now, I'd just like to take this moment and welcome Leo Kim to the show. Hi, Leo. How you doing?
Fine. Thanks for having me on.
I'm very happy to have you on. It seems like you've been on, you know, quite a journey in this lifetime.
Yes, I guess you could say that, yes.
More so spiritual of late, I'm assuming.
Yes. Although I'm still very much involved in science and conventional healing. But, yes, this this spiritual journey lasted 25 years.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess the big question, you know, that I would start off by asking is, you know, what, you know, you're a scientist and you work in the scientific field, you've got degrees, and yet, you know, this presenting this book that really has a very serious spiritual overtones to it, you know, what is the motivation that you had that propelled you to really want to write this book and put yourself out there in what would be considered to be traditional thinking?
Yes. Well, I was involved with clinical trials of cancer clinical trials. I witnessed many deaths, and that caused me to re-examine what science really knows. And the bottom line is that science makes great contributions, but for the big questions, they don't have answers. So in delving into it, because most scientists are trained rather narrowly, I broadened myself to include theoretical physics and cosmology. But at the same time, 25 years ago, I began very obsessively to learn as much as I could about spirituality and religion. And I must admit, at first I was very skeptical. I was a typical materialistic type scientist. What triggered my writing this book was the events of the last decade or so, which basically had so many revelations, about four or five revelations in science, that's turned science on its head. It basically is the biggest disturbance, the biggest upheaving of science in the history of science. And in looking at the details of that, without getting technical and going into the details, it basically validated what spiritual and religious teachings, the bottom line of them, for have been teaching for 5,000 years. And what I thought by writing this book for the layperson was that people could be really, really highly empowered to understand the resources that they have with their own mind and the healing power of their mind and the fact that if they can access the spiritual, that there could be such a change, positive change in one's life.
Right. It kind of leads me to my next question, which I know you can't go into great detail because we've only got a 55-minute show, but what recent scientific breakthrough led you to the belief that the world is a blending of mind and spirit? And how do those discoveries, you know, in the short version, support spirituality? I mean, just what exactly happened that really kind of in the last decade that you would say where science began to support what spirituality has always been saying?
Okay, what spirituality has basically always been saying, whether it's the Christian religion or spiritual teachings by various native world cultures, is that the important parts of our world are hidden. And starting about a decade ago, 1998, it was discovered that 96% of our universe was missing. And the finest minds and the finest instruments can't find it. It isn't that it was misplaced. The scientists, to make their theories work, have to propose concepts such as dark energy and dark matter, which compose, according to their calculations, to 96% of the universe. But that's not enough. In order to make the theories work, in addition to those concepts, scientists more and more are having to wipe the slate clean of prior concepts of just materialism, that this world is just composed of billiard ball-like atoms composed into molecules which create our brains, and our brains create our mind. In addition to those two concepts, the concept that there has to be a infinite number of parallel universes, and in addition to make the theories work, we need seven other dimensions, of which we haven't found. So we have, in this universe, we have 96% of it missing, plus an infinite number of other universes, plus seven dimensions, which are hiding somewhere. And if somebody would have wrote this 20 years ago, it would have sounded like very bad science fiction.
And so basically they found out just how much they didn't know. Would you, that'd be safe to say in the short version, how much they realized didn't exist.
That's right. And,
right.
And as I said, this is the greatest upheaval in the history of science and they didn't choose these because they were bizarre. They chose it because it's the only way that makes their theories work and be self-consistent.
Right. So what does this mean? What does all of it mean, the bottom line of the fact that 96% is unseen, which is basically what spirituality is saying, that it's believing in the unseen, or that there is certain things that are not seen. Is that where the connection is made?
That's part of it. But
okay.
spiritual teachings throughout the world for millennia have taught, whether it's religions or the African tribes, the Australian Aborigines, the Mesoamericans, the American Indians, all the major religions have taught that what's really out there is energy. And as you know, energy is immaterial. It isn't material. And that's the conclusion scientists are coming up with, is that the 21st century science says, you know what, what's really out there is just energy.
Right.
And
right.
So that's another, looping back several thousand years to where spirituality has basically prognosticated what science has come to.
Right. Well, you know, the one thing, you mentioned parallel universes and dimensions that are unseen, and that these have to exist in order for their theories to actually work. I get, I'm just, a mother of three, grandmother. I do understand numerology. I know a great deal about spirituality, and a great deal of experience with it. But, that concept boggles my mind. What is a parallel universe?
Well, different scientists have come to different conclusions, but they all seem to agree that these other universes are occupying the same space as ours, and they simply are on a different frequency, to use an analogy, a different frequency, like a radio station or a TV station. That's their current concept.
Right. But go ahead.
But recall that another big upheaval took place about five centuries ago when it was discovered that the universe did not evolve around the Earth. And what happened then was the throwing out of previous concepts and leading to more and more openness to accept concepts that fit the truth. That's where we are now. So
right.
A lot of these theories may or may not hold, but the beauty of it is a lot of, in my opinion, all of the previous dogma, such as materialism, needs to be thrown out, and it is being thrown out. And now we have top cosmologists and physicists saying, and they put it into the most prestigious scientific journal in the world, where the physicists and cosmologists basically said, we live in a world not of things. Everything out there is energy and information. And the bottom line is we live in a mental and spiritual world.
Right.
Now, this is an amazing statement.
Right, it is. And just to clarify, when you use the materialism, that is the belief that only the physical is real, and that's how you would define it. Because other people might define the materialism as having to have Gucci shoes and bags. Yeah, okay. So,
yeah,
so let's just clarify.
Yeah, the
let's just clarify it for,
yeah,
for the average person out here.
Yeah, to me, the scientific materialism are those that subscribe to the theory that, you know, everything is material stuff. And Richard Dawkins, who wrote God Delusion and was a bestseller last year, is a subscriber to the 17th and 18th century dogma, which is basically worshiping the false god of materialism. And he bases his book basically on that. Now, what that basically asserts is if we are just basically material stuff, billiard ball-like atoms composed in molecules creating our brain, and our brain creates our mind, then when the brain is gone, that's it. Nothing survives. And therefore, all this religious and spiritual hocus-pocus about afterlife and soul and God, all of those are myths. And therefore, a materialism has been, in my opinion, the biggest dogma that has stopped or prevented the healing of the rift between science and spirituality. And with these new revelations that I mentioned earlier, and the bottom line being that everything isn't material, they, in fact, it's the opposite, that allows the slate to be wiped clean and for us to basically see science supporting spirituality.
Right. Well, I'm not a scientist. I'm just a regular person. But I can remember when I was a child, and I wasn't all that old, but I used to love to read biographies and various different books. And I can remember reading a book about the formation of the Mayo Clinic and how that came about. And in that particular book, they were talking about the old ways that they used to, you know, just do practice medicine. And that they were, it wasn't so long ago, it was less than 100 years ago, that they didn't sterilize instruments or have sterile rooms to do surgery in, that it just, the concept of bacteria entering the body through instruments, it just wasn't, you know, it wasn't a practice at that time. And I can remember even as a child reading that and thinking, my God, you know, it sounded barbaric to me that not that long ago that this was the way it was. And in just in medicine and technology and all that has come from those times, you know, it has to be, it's a logical thing to think that what we think is true is subject to change. Everything is always subject to change. And a theory is just a theory until someone proves it different. Until someone comes along. Right. And so, therefore, to stand and to just, you know, on your soapbox and say, this is the way it is, period, and nothing can ever change it, that's totally illogical to me.
That's right, and you bring up a fantastically good point, and that is the greatest advances in medicine. And there was an MD by the name of Strauss, and he's referenced in my book, who went back in history and chronicled the 100 greatest advances in medicine. And you know, as you mentioned, I have been involved development of new drugs now for 25 years. And what's interesting is that as a physician looking at history, the number one event in the history of mankind in terms of healing, without which none of the others would have been possible, was moving away from the healers shunning their patients and treating them with disdain and fear, and turning to compassion and love. So here we have, with all of the modern advances, that the greatest advance in history was compassion and love,
which was an emotion.
Yes, and you can't put you can't put that in an equation, and you
can't put it in a bottle either.
Yeah, you can't put it in a bottle. That's right.
Right, and that kind of goes along with some of the things that science cannot explain, such as the placebo effect or the negative power of suggestion or the fact that miracles do occur, that they can't simply explain how somebody's cancer suddenly disappears or, you know, even if we go into the healing powers of the mind through meditation, through prayer, through setting the intention, through positive thought, or even science can't explain ESP or any of those things. Go ahead.
Well, science can't explain it, but modern science, 21st century science, has some very interesting theories, of which there are some experimental evidence. For example, Brian Josephson won the 2001 Nobel Prize in Physics, and he won it for a concept of quantum physics, and I won't go into the details, but he said this could explain ESP. And what I try to do in the book, in layman's term, is show how science can possibly explain the healing power of the mind, the placebo effect, the power of meditation and prayer.
Right.
And I don't present it as fact, as this is the final word, but I show
right.
where the latest gives very interesting and strong evidence.
Right. Well, the one thing I want to say to you, and of course this is totally based in numerology, numbers do, you know, numbers are energy, period. And the numbers that we possess in our chart helps to define our energy. And, you know, one of the things that I feel very strongly about 2009, and I'll make this statement now to you, and then you can call me at the end of the year and we'll see if I'm right. But 2009 is an 11 year. It's a master energy year. When you add it across, it's an 11. And what the 11 holds is really, it's the mother of invention. It's the mother of first. It's the mother of inspired, you know, almost coming from, you know, this cosmic pool of consciousness or whatever's out there, where I really think that there are going to be extreme advances with science. And I do think that the connection to the spiritual is going to be very strong, and where there might even be even more breakthroughs in science that does validate what spirituality has been teaching all along. And I think that 2009 is going to be a major year of first, where we're going to break the mold of what was thought was true, and where we're going to redefine what is true, or at least, you know, come in with something that validates the spiritual through science. And I really have great hopes for cures for diseases as well in 2009, based on the fact that it's an 11 year. And I just wanted to share that with you. And like I say, if you want to bet $20 on it, you can call me 2010 and we'll see how I did.
I'll place my bets right alongside yours. I agree with you.
Right.
2009, sorry?
It's going to be big. Go ahead.
Yes. Yeah, 2009, we will probably see some major announcements from the CERN reactor in Switzerland. We will probably see some very, very exciting results from satellite images looking at the cosmos. But also 2009, we may see some early results of a clinical trial that started about 5 weeks ago that actually is looking for very strong evidence, if not proof, that there is consciousness when there's no brain function in people who have cardiac arrest.
Really?
And although there's very good evidence for it now, but this is a clinical trial that would have been unheard of 20 years ago. It's involving 25 hospitals in Europe, Canada, and United States with some of the finest cardiologists in the world, and it will eventually involve 1,500 patients. So this is going to be, you know, assuming that happens, and assuming it's positive, that which would support earlier data that's referenced in my book, it would be very strong evidence for the afterlife and for consciousness not being created by the brain. Now, what I mean by that is the dogma was, up until the 80s, was, number one, the brain creates the mind, and number two, the brain could not be rewired after adolescence. But a psychologist at UCLA, Jeffrey Schwartz, showed that OCD patients, obsessive compulsive disorder patients, could actually rewire their minds with mindful meditation and alleviate or cure themselves of the OCD urges. Now, since then, there have been countless studies involving other disorders and normal people that show the so-called brain plasticity, that shows that the mind can rewire the brain. So the dogma of the brain creating mind has been turned upside down. The mind creates brain.
Wow.
And
that sounds
this is a scientific fact.
Wow. And that, but the clinical trial sounds extremely exciting and a little, I have to go a little bit validating about what I said just prior to it. So isn't that exciting? That's, you know, when we're speaking about science having to rethink things, I mean, just recently I read an article that said that they did not believe it was possible, but they actually discovered a hole in the Earth's electromagnetic field, which up until that particular time, they didn't really feel that that was possible at all, that there was no such thing as a hole could exist in it, but they discovered one. So right then and there, they just threw out what they considered to be true and had to replace it with what they had discovered. And that's a very recent discovery. So, you know, nothing is set in stone, right? Nothing can be set in stone.
Especially in science, which is different than a lot of other fields. But in science, you know, dogma is the kiss of death. And there have been so many very notorious cases where leaders in science held to a particular dogma. One famous one is criticizing Kepler about four centuries ago that the moon creates tides on the Earth, and he was chastised and called basically a lunatic and
right.
a moon worshiper. So dogma in science is very bad.
Right. Well, I found a lot of the reading in your book. I mean, I think I learned a great deal. The chapter on the human brain, the development of the brain, what the brain does, was absolutely fascinating to me. I didn't realize that the brain itself continues its actual physical development into the teen years. I was kind of like, wow, that's fascinating. There are so many different things in this book. You know, I don't know, pick something that meant something to you. You know, what would you consider to be one of the most important aspects of the book? I mean, the conclusion by the end of it, or, you know, even when you get into talking about the explanations for ESP, you know, is there anything in particular that you want to just bring up?
Well, I tried to lay out in lay terms sort of a step-by-step build-up and a foundation using world-class scientists and Nobel Prize winners, but put it in lay terms. And when I got to that chapter on the brain that you just mentioned, that was basically a prelude to what I considered one of the most important chapters in the book, and that was mind and consciousness. And as I mentioned, it's mind that creates brain and not the other way around, and people had to understand the basis for that. And once they do, now we get into what I talked about earlier, the understanding that people have this very, very outstanding resource in terms of their mind. And, you know, imagine a little child for the first time maybe seeing a TV, and she might look at it and say, well, you know, that's pretty interesting. That box can create, when you turn it to the number 5, it gives the news. And when you change it to 10, it gives a talk show. And when you change it to 15, it gives a game show. And it's logical for her to conclude that the television creates all that stuff instantaneously. Well, the receiver on our shoulders for, you know, for a long time, scientists have were of the dogmatic view that it created our reality. It created everything we see. But in reality, what it is, it's a receiver. It's a receiver. And, but most of us, we're picking up so much static, like, you know, remember to pick up the milk on the way home, and gosh, I gotta write that report by tomorrow. And oh yeah, I better spend such and such time with my family tonight. Blah, blah, blah. And all of that noise prevents us from staying calm, letting the tuner tune in to the wisdom of the universe, and to really access the spiritual, including our spiritual self. And when that happens, then we can better understand how the most phenomenal event in science, that is, as far as I'm concerned, science demands reproducibility. How did all of these cultures over millennia come to the same conclusion that everything right. out there is energy? They did it by tuning in to the universe with mindful meditation or prayer, or trans, and that's how they accessed it.
Mm-hmm. So the conclusion, like if there's any wisdom that comes from your book of how do you put to practical use the information that's in the book would be what you just said, which is understanding that we have, our minds have the ability to connect to something outside of ourselves or greater than ourselves. Is that the practical application?
Yeah, I think there are several.
Okay.
Number one, you can discover the spiritual you, which reveals your passions.
Mm-hmm.
Realizing how to realize your purpose and how to find greater happiness in life. Number two, I think dealing with death and illness of friends and loved ones, that's always a difficult thing. And I think scientific findings that I chronicle in the book of afterlife and wellness really deals mm-hmm. with that. And then the third one we touched upon is the healing mind. How changing our mind can and does change your brain, your health, and your life.
Right.
And I mentioned the LCD example, but it goes well beyond that. You can rewire your brain, but your brain's connected to your body, and you can change your body, you can change your health, and you can change your life.
Right. Through connecting to quieting, stepping away from what you call the materialism, and realizing that there's more to it than that. Through, mm-hmm. right. Okay. Well, that makes an incredible amount of sense. And I thought that, you know, seeing the science presented in the book and then the conclusions drawn from the science and the inevitable outcome at the end of the book, which is, you know, kind of empowering you by, you know, having that knowledge or at least making you think about it, you know. It just seems to me, though, that, you know, if you're a scientific person or skeptical, you're going to go, you know, that's the big thing with like, all right, like most of us or most of the people, even skeptics, have had some sort of an experience that they question, you know, something spiritual in nature. It's a phenomenon of sorts. And most of the people, 90% of people in the United States, believe in something, whether it be angels, whether it be God, whether it be, you know, whatever you want to call it. But they're looking to science to give us, you know, what is the reason for these things happening, right? And mm-hmm. so what you're saying is that we can tune into this higher vibration ourselves, you know, and yeah. maybe this is part of this, what they can't see is really what we're, you know, these people that have had these experiences actually are doing. Do you understand my question?
Yes. You know, the vast majority of scientists also are spiritual and or religious. It's just that they're the silent majority. It's a small, in my opinion, minority, like Richard Dawkins, who may create a big stir and throw stones at spirituality and religion. And what it takes, I think, is to understand that that there is a consistency, and how most scientists are trained rather narrowly. Most scientists don't understand quantum physics or cosmology. They may watch a popular TV show or read a book or two on it, but they couldn't describe string theory or dark matter or dark energy if their life depended on it. So it's important to write something, and I've had several scientist friends who have come back and say, wow, okay, now I understand that, and and that you're right. It seems to support spirituality.
Right. So that is somewhat the purpose of the book, is to be able to, as you say, bridge that gap, right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, you know, you're talking about one of the things that I know from numerology, and perhaps you can, based on your book and what you've learned, and maybe you can explain this to me, but in the numbers, you know, there is actually, you know, based in numerology, which is, you know, spirituality, it's a spiritual philosophy, more or less, certain people are wired with a higher vibration, so to speak. And it is through that vibration that they have an easier access, maybe, to other dimensions or to the spiritual realm or the cosmic consciousness or whatever it is that you want to call it, that they have this ability to go beyond maybe what the average person is able to do. You know, on some level, people call it gifted. For me, I think that everyone's gifted at something. Perhaps some of us, our destiny or what it is that we're here to experience is more along the lines of bringing, you know, connecting to something, a different dimension or something like that. That's part of why we're here. Whereas somebody else, you know, their gift may be related to raising children or teaching or music or art. But there are people that are wired differently. And I know that in your book I was reading, and they were talking about certain people that actually, I'm not sure if it was Einstein, that he had a fold in his brain or something that made it easier for him. I forget what exactly you said.
He lacked a fold which allowed, which allows faster and easier communication within the brain.
So he had something physical in his makeup that they could explain that particular thing with him. But there are people who, the spiritual phenomenon, the ability to connect to something, you know, it's in their numbers, it's in their vibration, and personally the numbers are representative of energy.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of touched on that a little bit in your book, you know, that why would some people be able to do it and others not? With the explanation for ESP.
Right. And I try to give examples on the power of these events that scientists might, shrug their shoulders with, but nowadays there's a growing amount of scientific data for it. In my chapter on afterlife, Gary Schwartz actually hired some of the best so-called readers to help him access the dead. He's a scientist, and he's published over 400 peer-reviewed journals, and his study was actually published, and basically the statistics show that it was 99% accurate,
mm-hmm.
which is phenomenal.
So what is the scientific explanation for that?
The scientific explanation, in my opinion, is that like that kid who looked at the TV and thought that the TV created all of this, most mm-hmm. people feel that the TV on our shoulders creates all of our reality. When in reality, everything that has ever been is out there. Now, for example, somebody who died 10,000 years ago, 50,000 years ago, their energy is still radiating through the universe. All of our energy, every second, every millisecond of our life, we are radiating energies from our brain, our heart, and our body. And the energies we radiate is very dependent upon our emotions, our thoughts, our just our overall being. So all of that of us and everyone who's ever lived is those energies are radiating through the universe, and they will continue to radiate through the universe forever. Now, so all of that energy is out there. And if we had the right receiver, if we could tune into it, then why shouldn't one be able to basically communicate and access that information?
Okay. All right. So that's a scientific explanation, right?
Yes. A possible
one. Okay.
Possible. I'm a scientist, so I like to I like to qualify. But
well,
the evidence is mounting.
The jury is out. Okay. Well, you know, it's just that I've interviewed enough mediums, and also, you know, because you know, part of my experience is just having those opportunities to interview some really fantastic mediums and psychics, and to somewhat be in awe of their ability to access information seemingly that other people are not able to access. So is it possible that in their minds they don't, they have hold a belief system that they can? Is it based in confidence somewhere, or is it based in believing in their ability, and therefore that can create the, you know, that connection?
I think part of it is an innate gift they have in terms of their body and their brain. But I think a much larger part of it is their ability to quiet their mind and access the spiritual. Now, let me tell you why I believe that. I had the privilege of studying with Bernie Siegel, and Bernie has written many books, and he's chronicled so many cases where somebody who's had no ESP revelations at all suddenly feel that something is wrong and they need to call a mother, a sister, a loved one, a friend, when just as they reach for the phone comes in and say and tells them that the person has passed on. So in times where maybe the stress is high or their mind is clear, you know, they can tune in to these events.
Sure. Just recently, the other day, this actually happened to me. I, for the entire day, this person kept coming to mind, but my day was incredibly busy, and I kept getting distracted, and I kept putting it off, but every time I turned around, this person's name came into my head, and so finally I sat down, and I thought to myself, well, I'm going to read my email, and then when I get done with my email, I'm going to call this person. And when I got to my email, there was an email from this person, and then immediately I understood why that person had been on my mind. I was not aware of the fact that that was the very day that her husband had passed away 4 years ago. So it was an extremely difficult day for that person. I was not aware of that. I did not have knowledge that that was a specific day. However, that person was so heavy on my mind all day long. And then to find it in my email, that was the reason why. And I had no way of, you know, other than pulling that out of the cosmos somewhere, I had no way of being able to explain, except for it was a very emotional day for her. And so really, that was the motivation to want to pick up the phone and call her.
And maybe that emotional day led to her being able to send out basically, you call it what you want, electromagnetic energy, an aura or whatever, and to rise above the noise out there so you could pick up on it.
Sure. Well, there was something about it, because it was just, to me, as soon as I read the email and I understood the significance of the day, then I understood why her name kept coming to my mind and why she was weighing heavily on me that day and why I wanted to make that phone call. So, so you know, makes an incredible amount of sense. But as I said, in the numbers, people are, some seem to be wired. And even in numerology, and this is an ancient science, it dates back to 560 A.D., And it is really, you know, if you understand the numerology itself, you know, it has ties to Rome, Egypt, Greece, China. It even has ties to the Hebrew Kabbalah, so it's very spiritually based. And it is talking about higher vibrations with certain numbers, and these people having more, they literally, some numbers have the ability to access the spiritual realm, which is technically another dimension, if you really want to call it that. It's a different dimension. It's to be able to see or hear the unseen is really what when we talk about clairvoyance, when we talk about clairaudience or clairsentience, we're talking about being able to access information that's unseen, or that there's no reasonable explanation of why you can do that or see it or hear it. You know what I'm saying?
That's right. And, you know, I was at a Asian hotel over New Year's in San Francisco, and, you know, I looked at the elevator pushing the numbers to go to my floor, and sure enough, there was no fourth floor, and there was no 13th floor. Now, most of us understand the significance of the negativity towards 13, but to the Eastern culture, the number 4 means death.
Oh, yes, yes.
So,
right.
Yes.
In numerology, the 4 represents death. It's returning to the earth, so.
Mm-hmm.
But go ahead with your explanation.
No, that's all I was going to say.
Right, right.
So that cultures, and it isn't just the Asians, I agree with you, cultures around the world, they associate meaning to numbers, and perhaps the greatest tribe of all are the scientists. They couldn't exist without numbers.
No, they couldn't, could they?
Right.
No. But I don't think we can get them to understand that numbers have esoteric meaning, though. I don't know if that's possible. You can put a word in for me.
Yeah, because I think they're trained to look at the world through a set of books that they've studied for, you know, 15, 20 years in terms of the heavy mathematics that goes with the numbers.
Right. Well, Leo, I just want to take a moment here, and I forgot to give out the numbers, and there may be somebody that's listening that maybe has a question for you, and they're more than welcome to call into the show. We do have some time here, and I just want to give out the toll-free numbers. If you're in the USA, you can call 877-876-5227. If you're calling from Canada, you can call toll-free at 888-815-9756. And certainly if you're in the California area, you can call direct at 530-876-3222. And my guest this evening is Leo Kim, and he wrote the book Healing the Rift. And it's really wonderful.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but for those who either don't get the chance or would rather email me with a question or comment, they can email me at leo@healingtherift.com.
Right. And some people are a little shy, and they maybe don't want to get on the radio to ask you a question.
Right.
So if you want to email Leo, you can email your questions. And that's very kind and generous of you to offer to do that. And I do suggest that everyone visits his website, certainly if you're interested in getting a hold of the copy of a book, which was a really fascinating book. It's kind of like being a little bit country, a little bit rock and roll. Well, I'm very spiritual, but I'm also very skeptical and very scientific, which, you know, numerology is a pseudoscience. Basically, it's based on calculation, so, you know, maybe I'm just a little bit of both. But you know, I love books that do what yours did, which is really kind of bring the science in to validate the spirituality. And so if you're interested in getting a hold of this book or even asking Leo a question, again, I'm going to give you his website, which is www.healingtheriftbook.com. And I believe right there on your website, Leo, they can... if they go there and visit that, there's a place where they can send you a question or comment. Is there not?
Yes. It basically accesses the Best Buys on the Internet.
Okay.
And links them directly to the book. Yes.
All right. So that's the place to go. And also, you have a newsletter of sorts, Leo?
Sorry?
You have a newsletter that you send out?
Yes, if people go to my website, they can sign up for my newsletter, and I release the newsletter as needed. They won't be bombarded with things, but hopefully they would find a lot of interesting stuff in the newsletter.
Well, you have a fascinating blog going on there on your website. I didn't have a lot of time to go through everything, but I certainly bookmarked it. And the next time I've got some free time, I'm going to go back through, because you've got some really interesting blogging going on. You draw some attention to some things on YouTube. It could be a rather fascinating afternoon with a nice cup of hot chocolate and just going through your blog, because you write some pretty good stuff there.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I've been trying to post one YouTube post a week, which is accessible on my blog, but over the holidays I had a two-week reprieve.
You were slacking, Leo.
Yeah, that's me.
I had to laugh. Leo, I'm sorry, dear, but I had to laugh. One of your descriptions in the book, you were talking about television and how you were kind of... You switch the channels till you find something. You don't own a TV guide, and that kind of made me laugh, because it gave a little bit of insight into your personality. And then I also had to laugh because I thought it was very endearing. But in your press release, I think what it is say that you took up weightlifting to muscle yourself up because of weightlifting to fight off skinniness.
Yes.
I thought that was adorable.
When I went to the bookstore and I got this big book by Arnold Schwarzenegger, which was the Bible on weightlifting.
Are you serious?
I'm serious. And the guy behind the counter, he looked at me, and then he looked at the book. And, you know, I stand only about 5'6" and a half, and I probably weigh only 130 pounds. And he looked at me, and you could just see him swallowing his laughter.
Well, yeah. Well, I kind of laughed at that myself. And I'm lovingly kidding you, because I thought that was adorable. And, I mean, because when you've got somebody, when you're reading his personal fact sheet and you're reading all that tremendous education that you have and experience that you have, and even your interest reading scientific articles and books, you know, that's not the average bear sort of stuff. But what made you so human was weightlifting to fight off skinniness, which I thought was made you adorable in my eyes. I enjoyed that. And I also enjoyed in your book, because you really, I know that you took scientific information and you presented it, but when you presented a piece of yourself, whether it was reflecting upon your past or an experience in your childhood, when you wrote about your own experiences, Leo, you really are a very gifted writer, because in those moments in that book, I was mesmerized. I think that you really expressed very creatively, very interestingly, the way in which you put your words together. I was, they were very nice, pleasant moments of rest sometimes when you're trying to wade through quantum physics and parallel universes and whatever. You know, it's very nice that you put a little piece of that as well in your book. I very much enjoyed that.
Well, thank you very much.
Right. So we're just about out of time. So what I'd like to do is give you a moment here, Leo, and perhaps you'd like to, you know, just whatever comes to mind, whatever you'd like to share with our listeners regarding your work, regarding your book, regarding your journey. You know, just take a moment. You've got a couple of minutes here.
Well, you mentioned earlier how from numerology, 2009 is going to be a fabulous year, and I said I agreed with you. And we also talked about healthcare a bit. And we both talked about the wonderful advances of modern healthcare, modern medicine, etc. But in my opinion, we will see a complete revolution in wellness when we utilize the mind in conjunction with modern medicine. You know, we spent billions to send people into space and to develop new drugs, but we haven't We haven't spent the money, and I know a lot of physicians who would love to participate in the clinical trials where the mind, the positive nature of the mind can be utilized. And you also mentioned the placebo effect. We can do much better than placebo effects, even though, in my opinion, the placebo effect has actually cured more people than the drugs that were being tested. And this goes back to the 1940s. So,
that's a profound statement, Neil.
I believe that, you know, that's going to be one of the greatest revolutions of medicine when that happens. And what we need is the NIH and the NIH to sponsor that research.
Wonderful. Well, that's something to look forward to, Leo. And hopefully, you know, I don't know if they can charge us for our minds, so, you know, it'll be a little bit less expensive as well. So that'd be something to look forward to.
Well, I think everybody benefits. I think doctors will feel less frustrated. I think insurance companies could have a reason to lower their rates with a greater wellness.
And maybe
so I think everybody wins.
But it also empower people with their own health rather than them feeling helpless. And so that would be a really wonderful thing. And I'm looking forward to 2009, and I'll contact you to the end of it, and we'll see how we did, okay?
Super. I look forward to that.
All right. Leo, thank you so much for joining us here. A really wonderful conversation, a really wonderful book. And I remind everybody to please visit www.healingtheriftbook.com and take a peek at Leo's website, and it'll give you some information on how to order the book. And Leo, have a wonderful night. Thank you for joining me.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me on.
All right. Good night, everyone.
Thank you for joining us this evening. For more information, or if you wish to contact Allison for a reading, please visit www.visiblebynumbers.com or email Allison at alynch@ptd.net. Have a wonderful evening and be well.